This installment is part of OasisForAutism.com's At a Glance audio series.
Right.
Imagine your child receives a $50 birthday check from grandma. It's a moment to celebrate, right? Just a normal milestone. But the thing is, in the world of special needs planning, that single $50 check could literally cause your child to lose their health care, their housing, and their monthly income.
Yeah, it's a terrifying reality for so many.
It really is. Today, we are dismantling the terrifying $2,000 asset limit for Supplemental Security Income, or SSI. For years, you know, that number has been a source of absolute dread for families. But we are going to break down the exact strategies you can use to shatter that ceiling.
Because it is a completely different landscape today compared to even just a decade ago, provided you actually know how to navigate the mechanics. We're going to show you how to wield the two most critical tools in benefits planning. So that's ABLE accounts and special needs trusts, or SNTs. The mission here is to help you choose the right financial shield for your loved one without ever risking their crucial government benefits.
And to do that, we are pulling our core insights today from an incredibly comprehensive guide. It's benefits planning expert Jim Pulaski's book, When the Bus Stops Coming.
It's such a vital resource.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I want to quickly and enthusiastically plug this book, which is available over at OasisForAutism.com. The goal of today's deep dive is to actively educate, empower, inform, engage, and encourage you to take control of this incredibly stressful process. Okay, let's unpack this.
So to truly grasp why these two tools are so revolutionary, we need to understand the absolute wall that families were up against under the traditional SSI rules.
Right, with the wall.
Yeah, the system was designed decades ago, and it operates on this absolute razor's edge.
Let's talk about what living on that razor's edge actually feels like. Because under the old system, having exactly $1,999.99 in savings is fine.
You're totally compliant.
Right. The government sends the crucial SSI check that helps pay for food and shelter. But the moment you deposit one single dollar more, making your balance an even $2,000 boom, you fall off a financial cliff.
Damn.
You lose the entire SSI check for that month. So how do you ever build a safety net? I mean, how do you teach a young adult with autism about saving for a goal when doing so actively collapses their entire support system?
Well, you couldn't. I mean, the system actively punished financial responsibility. It enforced the state of perpetual poverty, essentially.
Wow.
But that drastically changed with the introduction of ABLE accounts, which stands for Achieving a Better Life Experience. They started rolling out state by state back in 2016, and they basically act as this massive legal loophole in that $2,000 wall.
A $16,000 loophole,
yeah,
to be specific, right?
Yes, exactly. Based on the inflation-pegged limits of 2024, you can save up to $16,000 a year in an ABLE account.
That's huge.
It is. That money completely bypasses the SSI asset limit. But the most crucial mechanical shift here isn't just the higher limit. It's what we call the cushion rule.
Okay, explain how that cushion works in practice, because this sounds like a massive structural change from the old financial cliff we just talked about.
Right, so think about the old cliff. You hit $2,000 and your SSI terminates immediately, 100% gone.
Just wiped out.
Exactly. But with an ABLE account, if you somehow go over that generous $16,000 annual limit, the SSI doesn't just vanish into thin air. Instead, the benefit simply reduces by $1 for every $2 you are over the limit.
Oh, wow. So it cushions the fall.
Exactly. You are gently penalized rather than, you know, totally financially exiled.
And setting one of these up is also remarkably frictionless, which isn't something you usually say about government programs.
No, definitely not.
You don't even need a lawyer. You just go to your state's designated ABLE account provider online, usually a specific financial institution contracted by the state. You fill out some basic forms and fund it. It takes maybe an afternoon, and opening it is completely free.
And once the money is in there, it is highly flexible, provided it is used for what the IRS calls qualified disability expenses.
Right, which sounds scary.
Yeah, people hear IRS definitions and panic, but this category is actually incredibly broad. I mean, it covers medical care, obviously, but also education, employment training, housing, transportation, and assistive technology.
So, like, everyday things.
Yeah. If your child needs a specialized iPad for communication or simply needs bus fare to get to a part-time job, the ABLE account covers it seamlessly.
Now, I do want to highlight a very specific strict line that you, the listeners, cannot cross here. It's called the double funding rule.
Oh, this is critical.
Yeah. You cannot use funds from the ABLE account to pay for basic food and shelter if you are already using your SSI monthly check to pay for those exact same basics.
Right, because the government views that as double dipping. They are providing SSI specifically for basic survival. The ABLE account is meant to, you know, elevate the quality of life beyond bare survival.
And state regulators monitor this.
They do. Also, to even qualify for one of these accounts, your child's disability, like autism, must be officially documented before they turn 26.
I know there's also an earnings test mentioned in Jim Pulaski's book.
Yeah, the earnings test just verifies that the individual isn't making substantial independent income above a certain threshold that would disqualify them from SSI in the first place.
Right.
But the vast majority of people already receiving SSI pass this earnings test without a second thought.
So mechanically, an ADLE account acts like a financial pressure valve for daily life.
That's a great way to put it.
Or maybe a better way to think about it is like a standard checking account where your child actually holds the debit card. It's great for buying groceries or paying for a rideshare.
Yeah.
But I have to ask a blunt question here.
Well,
if the kid legally owns this account and has direct access to the debit card, couldn't they just blow the money on something completely wasteful?
Yeah.
Like $3,000 on concert tickets or a massive video game collection?
What's fascinating here is the inherent tension between protection and independence. You've hit on the double-edged sword of agency.
Right.
Yes, the individual has access, and theoretically, depending on how you set up the account parameters, they can pull funds. On one hand, that is incredibly empowering. It is a real-world classroom for money management.
But it lacks a safety net if they make a bad impulse decision.
Exactly. It lacks strict external oversight from a legal guardian. Because the IRS and state regulators can audit these accounts, it requires meticulous receipt tracking.
Oh, so you have to prove it.
Yes. If the money gets spent on something completely unrelated to the disability and you get audited, you better have the receipts and the medical reasoning ready to defend it. If you can't prove it was a qualified expense, you risk losing the ABLE protection and owing penalties.
So if the ABLE account is fantastic for everyday agency, a new laptop or bus fare, what happens when grandma passes away and suddenly leaves a $50,000 house or a massive life insurance policy pays out?
What?
Because the $16,000 annual ABLE limit is instantly crushed under that weight. Where does that money go?
It would shatter the ABLE account entirely. And this is where we transition from the everyday checking account to the established heavyweight of benefits planning, which is the Special Needs Trust, or SNT.
Let's break down the mechanics of a trust, because the word gets thrown around a lot.
Yeah.
Unlike an ADLE account, which the disabled individual actually owns, an SNT is a robust legal structure.
It's totally different.
Right. You hire a lawyer to draft a document that creates a separate legal entity. This entity, the trust, holds the money for your kid's benefit without your kid ever legally owning a single dime of it.
And that distinction of ownership is the secret to the entire system. Because the trust is the legal owner of the assets, an SNT has unlimited capacity. Unlimited. You could put $500,000 in there. You could funnel a massive personal injury settlement into it. The money can sit there for decades. And because it doesn't belong to the individual on paper, it will never trigger an SSI benefit loss, and it will never count against Medicaid limits.
Going back to our analogy, if the ABLE account is a checking account with the debit card, the Special Needs Trust is a highly secure titanium safe deposited inside a bank vault.
I love that.
The money is absolutely protected from government limits, but your child does not have the combination to the safe. You designate a trustee, either a family member or a professional bank manager, and only they have the power to open the safe and distribute the funds. That solves the impulsive spending fear completely.
It does, because the trustee is bound by a fiduciary duty. And let's explain what that actually means. A fiduciary duty means the trustee isn't just supposed to be careful. They are legally bound by law to act solely in your child's best financial interest.
So they can't just take the money?
No, if a trustee gets greedy and buys a sports car for themselves using the trust money, they don't just get scolded, they go to jail. It is strict, enforced control.
But that level of armor comes with a serious price tag.
Yeah.
I mean, you aren't opening this for free on a Tuesday afternoon. Drafting a special needs trust with a qualified attorney will cost anywhere from $1,500 to $3,000 or more.
Yeah, it's not cheap.
And if you use a professional corporate trustee to manage it, you are paying ongoing fees of 1% to 2% of the total assets every single year.
Right. But those fees cover active management, legal liability, and complex annual tax filings that the trust requires. And in exchange for that cost, the expense rules are wonderfully flexible.
How so?
Well, you aren't boxed in by the IRS's list of qualified disability expenses like with the ABL account. When you draft the trust with your lawyer, you customize the language. You can dictate that the money is specifically for high-end supplemental living, so vacations, private caregivers, specialized therapies that insurance won't cover.
So as a parent listening to this, trying to budget my time and money, why would I ever pay a lawyer $3,000 up front and give up 2% of the money every year when the ABLE account is literally free and takes an afternoon to open?
Because you cannot protect a lifetime of family savings with an afternoon at the bank. Huh. If we connect this to the bigger picture, you're buying absolute armor against inheritance disqualification.
Give us an example of that.
I read a case recently where a well-meaning aunt left $10,000 directly to her autistic nephew in her will. She just wanted to help him out. But because that money wasn't intercepted by a special needs trust, the nephew's bank account instantly crossed the $2,000 limit.
Oh, no.
He lost his Medicaid. He lost his supported housing voucher. It took the family 8 months of exhausting legal battles and thousands of dollars in lawyer fees just to restore his benefits, all over a simple gift.
Wow.
So that $3,000 for a trust, its immunity, it is non-negotiable for large assets, family wealth, or life insurance payouts.
The heavy machinery is required for the heavy lifting. But even if you choose the right tool, there are hidden dangers. Let's talk about the trapdoors beneath both of these structures, particularly concerning Medicaid.
Yeah, this is where families must pay forensic attention because the rules change dramatically depending on your zip code and whose money you're using. Let's start with the ABLE account and what we call the ABLE state lottery.
Wait, I thought ABLE accounts were a federal program. They're portable. Like if you move from Ohio to Texas, you can take the account with you.
The SSI exemption is federal, yes. But Medicaid is a joint federal and state program, meaning each state gets to administer its own Medicaid rules.
Wow.
Because of this, Medicaid treatment of ABLE accounts varies wildly. Some states graciously preserve Medicaid eligibility for all the funds sitting in an ABLE account. But other states cruelly count ABLE funds against their specific state Medicaid limits once the balance gets high enough.
Wait, really? So a family could be perfectly safe on the federal SSI level, perfectly within their $16,000 annual limit,
yeah,
but accidentally disqualify their child from state-provided health care just because they moved across state lines?
Yes. The lack of uniformity is dangerous. You absolutely must check your specific state's Medicaid manuals regarding ABLE accounts. Special needs trusts, conversely, are universally recognized by federal law as safe from Medicaid limits across all 50 states. But the SNT has a trapdoor that is arguably much worse.
The Medicaid payback rule.
Yes. To understand this, we need to clarify the difference between a first-party SNT and a third-party SNT. It entirely depends on whose money is funding the trust.
Right.
If the trust is funded with the disabled person's own money, meaning the money was legally in the name before it went into the trust, like a direct inheritance they already received, or a personal injury settlement they won that creates a first-party S&T.
Here's where it gets really interesting. A little scary. Let me get this straight. The kid inherits money. You frantically shove it into a first-party S&T to save their Medicaid. And then when they die, the government can just claw the leftover money back anyway.
I know, it sounds incredibly unforgiving, but it is the ironclad law. It's called the payback provision.
Mm.
Because you use the individual's own money to fund the trust, Medicaid gets to step to the front of the line when the beneficiary dies.
Oh, wild.
They have the legal right to demand reimbursement from the remaining trust assets for every single dollar of care Medicaid paid for during the individual's entire life. And often, that wipes out the entire remaining balance. Nothing goes to siblings or charities.
That is deeply unsettling. You spend your life building the safety net, and a bureaucratic rule swallows it at the end. How do families bypass this?
By setting up a third-party SNT. A third-party trust is funded exclusively by someone else's money, usually the parents or grandparents transferred directly into the trust, typically through a will or life insurance beneficiary designation.
Okay, so it never touches the child's name.
Exactly. Because the money never legally belonged to the disabled person for even a single second, third-party SNTs are completely immune to the Medicaid payback rule. Whatever is left in the trust when the child passes away can go directly to their siblings or a chosen charity.
The wording in the grandparents' will is the magic key here. It cannot say, I leave $50,000 to my grandson. it absolutely must say, I leave $50,000 to the third-party special needs trust established for the benefit of my grandson.
That one sentence changes the entire trajectory of the family's wealth. It intercepts the money before it ever touches the child's social security number. And just for clarity, ABLE accounts are generally protected from the payback rule as well, though a few states still try to claw back ABLE funds. Again, check your state laws.
So if I'm a parent listening to this right now, we've painted a highly complex picture. The ABLE account offers cheap, empowering access for small amounts, but carries state-level Medicaid risks and strict spending limits. And the Special Needs Trust offers bulletproof, unlimited protection, but strips away the child's daily agency and costs thousands to maintain. It feels like a paralyzing choice. So what is the ultimate playbook for the listener? What do I literally do tomorrow morning?
You don't choose between them. The strategic answer is to use both simultaneously. Let's run a real-world scenario. Imagine you have $200,000 in savings and life insurance that you eventually want to leave your child to ensure they survive after you're gone.
Okay, step one. Tomorrow morning, do I call a lawyer or go to the bank?
You call the lawyer, you sit down and draft a third-party special needs trust. You don't even have to put the $200,000 in it right now. You just create the empty bucket, and you write your will and life insurance policies to point directly into that trust upon your death.
Okay, so the vault is built. What next?
Right now, you go online and open an ABLE account for your 18 or 19-year-old child. During your lifetime, while you are still here to supervise, you gift small amounts into that ABLE account. Your child can deposit money from a part-time job. They get a debit card, they learn to buy their own coffee, pay for their own streaming services, and manage a small budget.
And then, years down the line, when you eventually pass away, the system you built springs into action. The SNT trustee handles major expenses, paying rent, covering massive medical bills, securing long-term care, while the child uses the ABLE account for daily, regular needs, like transportation or smaller therapy costs.
Exactly. And this raises an important question about quality of life. This dual approach isn't just a clever tax evasion tactic or a legal loophole. It provides vital human agency.
Yes.
It teaches the young adult how to save and manage money via the ABLE account, fostering independence, while the SNT acts as an impenetrable vault protecting their long-term survival. You are providing ultimate protection without sacrificing their independence.
The $2,000 ceiling is officially broken. That is the core takeaway from Jim Pielesti's research today. You use ABLE accounts for immediate accessible savings under $16,000 a year to build independence, and you deploy special needs trusts to build an impenetrable fortress around life insurance, inheritances, and large family assets.
Beautifully summarized.
So what does this all mean for you? It means the era of living in terror over a well-meaning relative's birthday check is over. You have the power today to stop worrying about accidental disqualification and start actively building a secure, dignified future for your child.
As we wrap up this analysis, I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over. We spend so much time focusing on the legal mechanics of hiding money from government limits. We talk about trusts and tax codes. But consider this: if we successfully use these tools to build a massive financial safety net, how do we simultaneously teach a child the actual value of money when they've spent their whole lives being told they aren't allowed to have any?
That is a profound question and a perfect place to leave it. The legal planning is just the beginning. The emotional planning is the next frontier. We highly encourage you to check out Jim Pielesti's book, When the Bus Stops Coming, and explore all the incredible resources available at oasisforautism.com. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Take control, start planning tomorrow morning, and we will catch you next time.